Welcome to the Grow My Salon Business podcast, where we focus on the business side of hairdressing. I'm your host, Anthony Whitaker, and I'll be talking to thought leaders in the hairdressing industry, discussing insightful, provocative, and inspiring ideas that matter. So get ready to learn, get ready to be challenged, get ready to be inspired, and most importantly, get ready to grow your salon business. Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Grow My Salon Business podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Whitaker, and it's great to have you here with us today. Now, in case you don't already know, video versions of our podcast are now available on our YouTube channel. So if you'd like to put faces to the names, then head on over to Grow My Salon Business on YouTube and like and subscribe to the channel. So with that said, on with today's show. Now, with every episode, I try and look for an angle that makes it relatable, informative, and to appeal to as wide an audience as possible. Now, the majority of our listeners are salon owners, and many of them are also parents. And with both the roles of parenting and business building, there are inevitably rewards and challenges along the way. Now, for some people, those challenges are just the normal things that life throws our way. But for other people, the challenges that life presents them are seemingly insurmountable, but somehow they manage to find an inner strength and a depth of love and commitment, and they manage to find a way to keep going because there is no alternative. And so it is with today's guest, CJ Morello, who, along with his wife, have two very special children in their life. So in today's podcast, we will discuss the importance of knowing your why and how to deal with the challenges that life throws at you and so much more. So without further ado, welcome to the show, CJ.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's really exciting to finally be on the show instead of listening to it like I have for years. So excellent to be here and thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's really good to have you here. I'm really looking forward to this conversation today because, you know, we're going to go into some areas that I haven't really talked about with anyone else on the podcast before. So that's going to be exciting and it's going to be interesting for a lot of other people as well. So let's just start as I start with most people, which is I get them to pretty much introduce themselves by giving us an overview of you and your background. So if I can just ask you, who is CJ Morello? Give us your sort of 2-minute backstory for context of everything else we're going to discuss.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So obviously my name's CJ. I'm a salon owner here in Sydney, Australia. I own two beautiful salons that I'm very, very proud of. One in Roselle here in Sydney called Emma Dean Salon, and the other is in Newtown, also in Sydney, called AH Salon. Across the two, I like to think that they're a good size. So Emma Dean, 10 stations, 3 basins, and over in Newtown at AH, 17 stations, 6 basins over there. I've got a staff of about 30 now across both salons. We set foot into the industry maybe 6 years ago. And obviously over that 6 years has been a pretty interesting time with a lot of things that have happened globally and locally. And probably the biggest tidbit to add to my backstory is that I'm not a hairdresser. And I'm not even sure I'd set foot in a salon before I bought my first salon when I was 37, now being 43.
Okay. All right. Well, why hairdressing at 37? Why all of a sudden think I'm going to buy a hairdressing salon? So you bought an existing salon, did you?
Correct. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a great question. That's really the question that I'm either talking about my wife and I, or I'm talking about my business partner and I. And in this case, I'm talking about my business partner and I. So I'd always been involved in small businesses. I'd always had a history of working with small teams and just, I don't know if I'd call it an entrepreneurial sort of outlook on life, but I was just always drawn to opportunity. And when my best friend at that time of 25 years, who was very academic and is very academic, a PhD in chemistry, and was raising a family in Finland, working at, forgive me, whatever, their version of what we call here the CSIRO, which is basically the government science research body. He was bringing his family back to Sydney and he said to me, look, bringing the family back, I need to create a life for them, and a science wage is not going to cut it. I want to get into small business and I want to do it with you. What do you think? And from there, really, it was a snowball of of research and looking into different industries, and we just kept getting pulled back to hairdressing for a few different reasons. The financial side, obviously, it's not sexy to lead with, but the financial side really appealed to us because we liked that hairdressing wasn't two or three big clients. You know, it wasn't like having a couple of $200,000-$300,000 a year clients where if you lose one, you know, you're in real hot water. What we liked about hairdressing, it's regular drip fed income that's steady and over a lot of different clients. So that really drew us to it. We like the cash flow aspect, and I love working with small teams. I just love people. And I thought hairdressers would be a lot of fun, to be honest with you. That's definitely something that turned out to be true over the last 6 years. But in a nutshell, that's why we sort of ended up on hairdressing. You know, between my personality and Craig, my business partner's sort of numbers acumen on the background, it kind of just made sense. And we were blissfully naive, Anthony. We were blissfully,
yeah, that's good to hear.
Blissfully naive.
That's good to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Well, because I'm sure you've had it said to you that you don't understand, you're not a hairdresser. I'm sure you've had that said to you from staff over the years you've had the business. And that's interesting that you were drawn to it like that, because cash flow is an important component of a successful business. And yeah, hairdressing does have a very good cash flow, and it's not reliant on two or three big clients where if you lose one of them, you fall over. And it is very much a people business. So yeah, it's interesting that someone from outside the industry looks at the industry and looks at those positive points, because there are plenty of challenges that the salon industry has. And, I'm sure we can touch on some of those as we go. But it's great to hear you look at it from a business perspective and see that there was opportunity there for you and your partner. Do either of you work in the business on a daily basis? Like, are you in there behind the desk or something?
Oh, 100%. Every day, when I say every day, both our salons are open 6 days a week and occasionally on a Sunday. But every day I'm on the floor in both salons, and that's really important to me. Obviously, not being a hairdresser, I'm not doing clients clearly, but anytime I can clear a station or check someone out at the front desk or take an appointment or fold the towels or talk to the team, I guess, a lot of what I bring to the team, what we've lacked in a technical aspect, mindset has been a really beneficial thing for us to be able to talk to our teams about, because hairdressing can be a very frustrating, lonely, I think it's a very difficult job, particularly for someone who's in their early 20s, who's still trying to figure out what life's all about. And I guess what I try to bring to the team is how to manage frustration or how to manage people problems, because it's such a customer service based role. Some of the best hairdressers that I've seen over the last 6 years that have worked for us aren't necessarily technically the best hairdressers, if that makes sense. They don't have it's not the ones that get the best color or the best finish or give the most precise cuts. A lot of the time, a lot of the clients are drawn to some of our hairdressers who are just really good at making those connections with people. And that's what I feel like. If I have any strengths, I feel like maybe that's one of mine as well. That's some of the skill set that I try to help the team with each day. And I kind of just love the energy of a salon floor. So I find it difficult to stay at home, to be honest. So I really want to go and just be part of that. The music's playing, and it's a nice place to be. So, why wouldn't I want to be there,
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, that sort of segues perfectly into what we are really going to talk about here. When we first spoke about you coming on the podcast, you said to me that you would really like to talk about the power of knowing your why. And that intrigued me. And so tell us why that's so important to you.
Yeah. I guess what we're talking about there is that the power of someone's why is the reason you get out of bed. And I think a lot of people sort of think about that concept a lot of, well, I've got to get out of bed. I've got to go to work, and I've got to feed my kids. And I get that, but it's a stronger driving force that I think every person really needs to have. It's a purpose for you on why you're on earth. And for me, I've got an extraordinarily strong why and an extraordinarily strong driving force behind me that – through all those difficult times of owning the salons in the last 6 years, and COVID, obviously, that we've all sort of gone through in different ways, was one of those. In our first 12 months of owning our first salon, we, like you said, that was an existing salon, and we had six staff that we took on who were already in the business. Five of those six staff were women, and in the first 12 months, four of the five got pregnant. So when we took over the business, within 12 months of owning it, four of the six staff left for maternity leave and only one came back. So for two guys that had never been in that industry before, man, we had to figure that stuff out quick. And we got about you know, a decade's worth of salon management inside of 12 months about rebuilding that team, figuring out what to look for a good employee, let alone a good hairdresser. I'm really proud to say that we built that team up, and today that team's of about 12 in that salon. It's, you know, it's doubled in terms of gross revenue and net profit as well. But the only reason I got through some of those tough times because it was my why, which is based around my family. So previously, obviously talked about the professional me with the salons. I'm a very proud salon owner. And when I'm not at work, I'm an equally, or even obviously bigger, more proud father of two just beautiful rays of light, my two children. So my eldest son, Maddox, who's 6 years old, and my daughter, Ada, who will be four in March, two just gorgeous little creatures who, I guess what a doctor would probably refer to as, who are both profoundly autistic.
So, CJ, I'm going to assume that everyone has heard of autism, but like many things, you don't always know a lot about something until it impacts on you personally. So can you just explain, just give us a brief overview of what exactly is autism?
Yeah, and that is an important question. And autism is a spectrum that is extremely broad. So to say what it is difficult to answer for everybody. So what I might do is maybe just answer for what it means for my children and our family. So for my two little ones, it means it's extremely and highly impacted their ability to communicate first and foremost. So both of my children are non-verbal, or what we like to say is pre-verbal, because we do, you know, potentially they will talk at some stage, but at this point communicating verbally is not something they're able to do. And even just general communication you might see from a child, you know, pointing or gesturing for something or using hands and things like that is not something that certainly my six-year-old has virtually never done. So communication is limited to a very small degree. And what it also means for our kids is it means they have a heightened experience when it comes to sensory things. So, and that can be a positive and can be a negative. So you might see my children just be in absolute joy from a gust of wind. You know, they might stand outside and feel the wind going through their hair and just feel like this is incredible. And just, you know, Anthony, think about the most joy you've ever had in your life. And it probably doesn't come close to sometimes what my children might experience every day.
Right.
Unfortunately, those sensory issues, there is a flip side to that coin, and that is that they can find the smallest thing like a, gosh, sometimes because of the communication issues, to be frank with you, I don't always know what upsets them, but you know, it could be anything from one of their toys slightly being in the wrong space or something not feeling right, and that will trigger an absolute complete catatonic loss of their of control of themselves. You know, it's fear and it's anxiety, it's and that manifests itself into a violent meltdown, and I won't get into that, but it can be an extraordinarily difficult thing, to put it mildly, to try and help or try and stop your child, you know, physically doing extreme harm to themselves. And that's sort of been a daily life for my wife and I now for at least 4 years of my son's life. So, for us, that's what autism means to us and our household anyhow. But it is different for everyone. Right.
Yeah. And is that something, you know, that communication side of it, is that something that could change? So, like, they could, eventually learn to speak, that you just don't know. It's like it could be like that forever, or they could change. Is that it?
Yeah. I mean, essentially, we're working really hard, and we've got the kids in an incredible autism specific school that helps them in a range of different levels, and one of those is communication. We don't tend to necessarily focus on verbal communication as a goal. And I know some of your listeners might think that's really odd, but our children, you know, will develop it in a way that's unique to them. And communication takes a lot of different forms. So whether that communication takes place with the aid of some sort of tablet or, you know, some sort of assistance in that sense, we don't necessarily have an end goal that our children will speak. If they do, fantastic. But same way, I guess I heard an analogy recently of, you know, if someone's hearing impaired, for example, the goal necessarily isn't for that person to hear at some point. It's for them to be able to live a life that's full and rich and just find other ways of experiencing that life. That's the way we sort of look at it for our kids.
Yeah, okay. So that's really what you mean when to talk about your why. And that's your why, that you've got these two little people that you've been blessed with, and you have such a huge responsibility as a dad to, navigate their life through your life as they grow older as well. Because when they're, I forget how old you said, I know you said that Maddox was six.
Six, and Ada is 4 in March. So, still very little.
Okay.
But, to your point, I need to have the thought of my children might work for NASA someday, or potentially they may never hold down a regular job for their entirety of their lives. And as their dad, I feel like it's my job to plan for the worst.
Yeah. And so I want to pick up on something that you'd said to me earlier where you said, so my why, I'm going to paraphrase your words here, so please correct me if I get it wrong. You said, my why is that I need to develop a 100-year plan.
Correct.
To make sure that my kids are okay, whether I'm here or not here. And I sort of jokingly said to you, I have a problem planning to get to the end of the week.
Yeah.
And so when you say to me that that's your 100, you know, that you are, and you're serious, that's not a flippant comment.
No.
You're really serious about that. Talk to us about that. What does that even sort of look like? That is your why. You've got these two beautiful little kids who are severely challenged, and you don't know what their future holds. And as their father, parent, guardian, you recognize that the government or no one else is going to have the vested interest in them that you have, and you and your wife. So therefore, you're sort of developing a 100-year plan. Just talk to us through that. That's incredible.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I first came up with that, and that's after about 12 months of, after we first realized that our children's sort of situation, and, I went through a 12-month period of, of grief, I guess is what you'd call that, when we first started to realize that our lives were going to be just radically different than the lives we sort of thought we were going to lead. And we realized that potentially we'd be looking after our children for the rest of our lives. So I went through a very dark period of my life for about a year, Anthony, where I, to be really frank with you, crying in my car at 5 o'clock in the morning was going through all those typical why me, and, I'm not strong enough to do this, and, some of that negative inner speak that really put me in a place that was dangerous, to be honest. I don't want to get too dark in your show, but it put me in a very difficult situation. But after about 12 months, fast forward, after I got over myself, to be frank, after I got past that, I started to think, okay, so I've got to find a way to look after these two beautiful little children, not just for the rest of my life, which is probably, hopefully, another 40, 45, 50 years. I've got to look after them for the rest of their lives. And I started to really, as a person, I'm a really even mix of, I'm a very emotional guy, but I'm also, I've got, and the other half of me is very pragmatic. So once I got past that emotional side after 12 months, I started to put the plan in place, and I started to think about that. And yeah, the more I thought about it, I realized my wife and I, the females in my background, in my lineage, and the females in my wife's lineage, her grandmother, her great-grandmother, and my grandmother, there hasn't been a woman in maybe four or five generations that's died under the age of 98. So I needed to get real that my children may very well live to be 100. And that's where the 100-year plan was born, because long after I'm gone, there's going to be an excess of 40 or so years where I need to make sure my children aren't homeless. I need to make sure my children aren't thrown out, you know, aren't on the street hungry or taken advantage of in a way I don't want to really think about too hard. So I came up with what is, my 100-year plan. So, I've never really had a lot of money or anything like that, but I needed to devise a financial structure that's going to look after them. And I don't know if you want to get into that per se, but, you know, it involves unencumbered property investing and you know, generating enough cash flow through business to be able to invest in property so they have a regular passive income. Because, again, I've got to presume that they can't do this for themselves. They're going to live a modest, happy, but, you know, modest life until their time on this earth is up.
There's two sort of different directions here that I'm not sure which we should explore, or should we explore both. And one of them is, that hairdressing is the vehicle to do that.
Correct.
That through these two hairdressing businesses, and potentially maybe more, and the money that they spin off as a business owner, that you will use that to invest in other things to generate a passive income, and you're doing that for very, you know, pragmatic, very practical, very heartfelt, genuine, whatever the superlative as we can attach to it. You're doing that for the most incredible reason, like your why is so incredibly strong. And that just blows me away. But at the same time, it's the other part of this is sort of saying to salon owners that are listening to this, you think you've got problems, you don't have any problems, you need to get a strong why. You know, CJ's why is a really strong why. It gets him up every morning, and it gets him thinking and planning and navigating a road, a path to build a great business that's going to spin off money, that's going to be profitable, that's going to allow him to invest in other things. There's like so many angles we could talk about here. So you take it in the direction that you feel most comfortable taking that conversation, because I really get the power of your why. It's massive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I almost feel sorry for people despite our situation. And then people look at my wife and I sometimes, I can see, you know, empathy or pity or whatever it is in their eyes. And I sort of think, man, don't feel sorry for us. I feel sorry for people that are just floating through life who don't have a purpose and don't have a reason. And I see so much potential in people every day, obviously, you know, in our salons, but anywhere, that's just almost certainly going to go unrealized because they don't have that why. And look, you've tapped into something there a little bit, you know, when you've said that some people might be listening and they might feel like they don't have problems in comparison to mine. And that's actually a challenge for me as a salon owner. And if you're a salon owner listening to this, you know, sometimes the stylist will come to you with something in their personal lives or something on the salon floor that they feel like is an enormous problem, you know, something that's rattled them completely. And as owners, or maybe because we're a little bit older or whatever that is, we'll see that, you know, we think that maybe, you know, you're overreacting, or maybe that's not a problem.
Yeah. Like someone stole my lunch. Like, you know, that used to be one of the big problems that people would have in my salon in the staff room. They'd say, I left my lunch here and someone has eaten it. You know? It's like, honey, if that's the biggest problem you've got in life, I know it's someone you need to talk to.
100%. But the problem with that, though, is, I mean, that's not fair for me to take that attitude into work. That's not fair for me to take that attitude to someone, because stress is relative. Everyone's living their own lives. And if for me to say, oh, you know, I didn't sleep last night, and I have those nights where I don't go to bed, right? I'm up with my son all night, but I'm still going to work because of that 100-year plan. I have never missed a day at work and I absolutely never will. But for me to look at a young stylist and say, your problems don't matter because they're not as big as mine, is not what leadership is. And that's not going to help the business. Same way in our autism community, there are families doing it far harder than my wife and I. So if I'm in their company, are they going to look at me and say, I can't say anything?
Yeah.
That's not fair to me.
Yeah.
So it's taught me a lot of things, that why in my situation at home. And one of them is to try, and you know, if you're an owner, it is an owner of a salon, it is difficult, you know, at times when you hear a complaint or, you know, you hear a stress point from an employee, but you got to remember that they're living a life too. And if you want to help them, then you got to listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something else that you said to me, and I'm sort of jumping about a bit and I'm intrigued by this, is that you said to me that your salons are growing and that you have a wait list of potential staff.
Mm.
And that's unusual, to put it mildly. A lot of people I'll talk to, whether they're in the UK or the US or Australia or whatever, they'll say the biggest problem I've got is attracting and keeping staff. And then here I talk to you and you say your salons are growing and you've got a wait list of potential staff, so things are good.
Yeah.
Is there a connection here between your why and the sort of business that you're building, or is there no connection between those two things?
Yeah. Wow. I think there's absolutely a connection. I mean, if the question is why do we have stylists continually knocking on our doors hoping to work with us, I mean, that's for a few reasons. Firstly, they're beautiful spaces and beautiful salons and gorgeous clients who are, you know, we're in a certain part of town that's friendly and, you know, it's a nice place to work. That's definitely a part of it. And another part of it is because we're not hairdressers, our ethos from day one was the hairdressers are gold in our business. You know, they are doing things obviously that technically I can't do. So my business partner and I from day one were just determined to try and make our salons the best place to work, both in how they get paid. You know, we pay our staff very well and we try to reward them wherever we can through various ways, some of them fun, some of them extra financial, whatever we can. So we make, you know, the old Richard Branson thing about look after your staff and your staff will look after your clients is definitely how we take things on board. But to answer your question directly about has my why impacted my business, man, I'm never not working, Anthony. I'm never not working. I actually mean that in an extremely positive way. I'm always, you know, on Instagram, networking. I'm always got, you know, my ears open. I'm listening to podcasts like your incredible show all the time. Because of my why, I never want to stop learning or speaking to someone or having a conversation. And just because of that, my network has just grown where I just know so many more stylists, or they just know about our salons through that effort that I'm putting in. So I guess in an indirect way, I think absolutely my why has dug us out of some holes in the business. It's helped us grow. And it's put us on a roadmap to do some really exciting things, I think.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you, how does having two, you know, profoundly autistic children impact on your life and your partner's life? You know, what is a day in your life look like? But to put that into context, I just want to say to the listeners that when I was organizing the time to talk to you, you're in Sydney, I'm in London, or just outside of London, and I said to you, well, you know, I'm going to have to talk to you at 7 o'clock at night for you, or maybe 8 o'clock at night for you. And you said, oh, no, that's too early. I won't be able to talk to you till, you said, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And the reason why is that you said, I've got to put Maddox to bed and I have to. And I've done it every single day of his life. And sometimes he doesn't go to sleep until 10 or 10:30 or whatever. So that's why we're talking at this time of night. So it's like it just impacts every area of your life. So talk to us about what that looks like. What's a normal day in your life, your wife's life, you know, like, you know, to deal with this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there isn't an area of our lives that hasn't been impacted by it, to be honest. So, well, you know, our children with their autism, what helps them is structure and what helps them is routine. And to touch on that point, you know, bedtime is a really good example of that. We have a shower or bath time at a certain time, and then we're in bed. And bedtime for us goes for about 4 hours. So I will take my son to bed at 7, and I stay in there with him. We co-sleep because he can't get to sleep without me physically being there. And that might take 3 or 4 hours for him because his mind never stops and his body never stops. And for him to eventually calm down, maybe it's 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. And that process cannot be interrupted. And in terms of when I say it cannot be interrupted, the consequence of that happening is, I referenced it a little bit before, is, the worst case is a violent physical meltdown. And for those who are listening who might be in a similar situation or whoever have ever witnessed their child trying to, put a hole through the wall using their forehead repeatedly, I'm on duty. I'm on duty and I'm there to stop that. And I cannot allow my children to be in that sort of situation. I've done bedtime with my son since my daughter was born, and she's going to turn 4 in a couple of weeks. And I did the math on it the other night. So I think it's consecutive nights. It's almost 1,450 consecutive nights where my wife and I have not been outside the house after dark. So if you're talking about, how does it impact your relationship? How does it impact your social life? We've lost friends, 100%. I think in a lot of times in the autism community, unfortunately, I think the rate of divorce is incredibly high. But back to the power of why, my wife and I are on a very similar path. And whatever happens, whatever stress that we get put under, we've made a conscious decision to look to each other, not elsewhere. Whatever hardship we go through in business or whatever, it doesn't matter. We're choosing it to make ourselves stronger, not the other way around. A day in life for me is, I've got to wake up my son. I can't let him sleep too long. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I've got to wake him up. Otherwise, he'll be up even later in the evening. So I've got to wake him up at 7 o'clock and get him ready now for school, which is really exciting. So he goes to an incredible school called Giant Steps here in Sydney that's autism specific. But we get him ready, get off to school, and he enjoys his day. And then I go straight to the salons and I'm fitting in as much as I can in my day before I've got to head home. And this is much better now that they're going to school, which is incredible. Previously, my wife was at home trying to manage both of them by herself because we weren't in a situation where we had family help and we couldn't find the right help outside of family either. So I've got very clear visions, Anthony, of rushing home at maybe 1:30, a very short day, around 1:30 in the afternoon, when my son was demanding to go on walks at that time of day. And I'm rushing home and finding my wife somewhere around the streets of our house, walking our son, pushing a pram, sometimes for 2 hours, and trying to relieve her out of that. And one of the curly aspects, I laugh now, it certainly wasn't funny at the time, those walks that had to happen. My son wanted to go on the walk, had to go on the walk, but refused to walk. So my wife had to carry him on her shoulders. So if you can imagine, at that point he's 4, he's probably 18 kilos by now, and that walk had to go for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And there is no one tougher in the world than my wife. And that walk was happening rain, hail or shine. And I clearly remember coming home in pouring rain, seeing a pram covered in plastic so that Ada wouldn't get wet, and my son in his raincoat sitting on my wife's shoulders, just ruining her back and her shoulders. As they walked for 60, 90 minutes, I jump out of the car and I grab Maddox and put him on my shoulders instead. And my wife and I just look at each other and go, okay, let's just get through it. This is what we're doing, and we just got to find a way to get through this.
How do you get through that? I mean, what are some of the coping mechanisms that you come up with to get through that can be applied in other areas of your life, I suppose?
Great question. There's two, right? So again, I won't dwell on it, but the power of why is that there is no giving up. I feel like there's a lot of business owners or there's a lot of hairdressers or, in any area of life that when things get hard, they're almost looking for a reason to stop. They sort of think, this isn't the life I wanted, or, whenever there's a speed bump, they give up. There are no speed bumps for us. Like, we expect every day to be extraordinarily difficult and we embrace it. So the power of why gets me through any situation, but in terms of, if there's another strategy that I can tell your listeners about to get you through anything, the power of positive inner speak will change who you are as a person. You know, I grew up in a sort of environment where a negative internal dialogue is something that I took into my adulthood. So frequently when I was faced with a challenge through my 20s, I would be talking to myself in my head things like, you're not going to get it right. You should be giving this task to someone else. You know, you're going to screw it up. These sort of things, really negative inner speak. And anytime I was under pressure, I'd crumble, Anthony. I'd crumble. I am not, by definition, a strong person. It's just not who I was. It's not, by default, it wasn't who I was. But when my children came along and my power and the 100-year plan became a thing, I had to turn that inner dialogue into positive speak. Now, I don't care what happens in my day now. I don't care. And when I say I don't care, please take that the right way. But, you know, no matter what situation my children are in, no matter what situation the business is in, man, there is nothing going through my head that isn't, we're fixing this. Yep, this might be bad now, but you know what? There's probably a positive in it. What's the positive? What's the lesson we learn from that? Over and over and over, because just telling yourself the positive that you're seeing in front of you, man, that just comes out. It just radiates out of you. It attracts positivity in the people around you, and it forces you to find a solution. It forces you, that inner positive inner speak. I cannot, you know, other than the power of why, that would probably be the other thing, that if someone was finding life a bit difficult in business, in your relationship, what you tell yourself, you know, between you and just in your mind, just you alone, what you feed yourself with your own thoughts, you can choose what they are, 100%.
Yeah, and so I'm right in saying that it was having two profoundly autistic children that has made you find that in yourself.
Oh, my God, yes. I would describe myself almost as, you know, at times a mental weakling. And, you know, an emotional weakling, maybe that's more accurate, definitely an emotional weakling. Yeah. If someone said something to me about my appearance or my abilities, I would crumble. I just sort of think like, oh, okay, well, I don't think that's true, so it's probably not.
I was going to say to you, what have you learned about yourself? But I suppose you've just been answering that.
You learn a lot, Anthony. So, we've referenced bedtimes a little bit, and there was definitely a period that went for a long time. Where through the middle of the night these meltdowns would be happening and there was no sleep. And, you know, when you're sleep deprived to the point where you're having almost out-of-body experiences, you know, when you haven't slept in what virtually is months, and you're faced with scenarios like when I'm in that bedroom and I need to look after my son, there's no one coming to help me. There is no help on the way. And in some ways, I've actually said this to my team before, this is a dramatic leap, but hairdressing is also can be very singular. Like when you're standing at that chair and you're faced with something that you're on display, firstly, everyone on the salon floor can see you, but you're going to come up with a solution yourself, because when that client's there, you can't just crumble. You can't just yell out, oh, I need help. You need to find that solution on your own. And when I'm in that bedroom, I know no one's coming through there to help me in this, like this dire scenario, the most emotional situation of you know, not being able to sleep for so long and your son is going through a situation, in that moment, Anthony, you find out exactly who you are. And I'll be honest, it's not always the person you thought you were. You know, when you're under extreme pressure, you know, when soldiers in a trench or, you know, when people are faced with abuse or whatever, when you're in that extreme scenario, and I've been and I'm sometimes still in that, you find out who you are. And the only thing I guess I can recommend to people is you don't have to be. If you don't like who that person is, you don't have to be him. You can be whoever you want.
Yeah.
You just got to find the right strategies to do it.
Yeah, that's really profound. How do you look after yourself in amongst all this? Like, how do you do that? I mean, it's not like you get a night off.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like how do you do that? How do you nurture, look after, protect yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's always at the bottom of my priority list. But at the same time, if I'm creating a 100-year plan, I do have thoughts that I need to look after my health, because I can't ship off this mortal coil early. I can't leave before I've achieved my goal, if that makes sense. And some people might think that sounds a little bit morbid or a little bit clinical. That's what my life is. You know, it forces you to think about some things that you'd never would have thought about before. And I regularly think about my deathbed. I regularly think about what my last thoughts will be. And I know exactly what it will be. It will be, are my kids okay? And I'm not waiting between now and then. You know what I mean? I'm not waiting till that point. I'm figuring this out now. So to answer your question, how to look after myself, you know, I get regular feedback from people who love me, like my wife, that I don't, for starters. The biggest thing for me is I share a lot. I talk a lot. My wife and I talk a lot. You do not bottle things up. You know, everything's got to come out. The longer you keep anything inside, negative or positive, you know, it's got to come out of you. And whether if you want to seek out a mental health professional, I've done it. And I highly recommend it. If you've got one person in your life that listens to you when you speak, you know, we've all got friends that necessarily are there for the good times, but not necessarily, you know, are there to lend an ear. You just need one. You don't need a group. You just need one. Do not keep it inside. You know, always keep talking about it. That would be, you know, how I look after myself. I don't get time to myself. Just this week, what day is it? Just yesterday, because both of my children were actually in school for the first time ever, my wife and I went out for breakfast and had a meal together alone for the first time in 6 years. In 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It was an incredible milestone for us. And, you know, we still can't get out at night, but the fact that we were able to have that time alone was amazing.
I hope it was good. I hope it was a good breakfast.
All we did was talk about the kids.
Yeah, of course you did. Of course you did. Okay. You have mentioned a couple of times about school and your kids, and you just mentioned it then again. And I think you said it's called Giant Steps. And I know that from our conversation that you talked about how it's not government funded. Is that correct? It's not government funded?
Yeah. So the school, which is also set up as a charity, incredible sort of facility, is set up so they need about, I think the figure is about $3 or $4 million a year to keep the doors open, and they only get about half of that from the government. And the school also has an incredible ethos where they don't charge school fees, but they don't want to have any barriers to entry for families in my scenario. Yeah. So they rely on fundraising.
Yeah. I mean, the hairdressing industry all over the world are often involved in raising funds for all sorts of different causes. And I know that you're putting on an event to raise funds for Giant Steps. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, obviously, everything we've spoken about up until this point is relevant no matter where in the world you're listening to this.
Yeah.
But when you talk about the fundraising event, it's more relevant just to a more local audience. So explain what this event is that you're putting on and how people can get involved, or, you know, exactly what it's going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're putting on an event on March 25th here in Sydney with some of Australia's, you know, best stylists and most well-renowned artists is what I'll call them. And the whole point of the day, they're all, you know, presenting a one-day look and learn for me, completely free of charge. And the idea is 100% of proceeds go to the school Giant Steps. The event's called Come Together. Like I said, one day look and learn. Michael Kelly from Sell on Her here in Sydney, who's an incredible international educator and beautiful salon. Belinda Mills from Pipsqueak and Saigon. Frida Rizzides, the co-creator of Mr. Smith, and Monique McMahon from Q Colour in Sydney. It's going to be an incredible day. And I think it actually might even be a bit of a landmark day for our industry here in Australia, because I can't find anybody who can tell me about another charity-based day where all the proceeds were going to such an incredible cause. So I'm so proud, you know, to be able to rub shoulders with these elite hairdressers, career hairdressers who have just done an amazing job. And just, you know, who leapt at the chance, to be honest. I'm indebted to them because they leapt at the chance to be involved in this event. If people want to check out the event, we will have a little link on there for people who want to donate to the school from wherever you are in the world. You can always find this on our Instagram page on the salon, which is AH Salon in Sydney. If you just look that up, you'll be able to find us. And I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm really excited about what it means for our industry and obviously what it means for the school.
Is it a is it a live event for a whole day with a whole lot of different presenters? And it's in Sydney. Whereabouts is it? In a hotel or?
No, it's in a quite a different venue. So it's called the Grand Electric, which is typically a cabaret venue. So in a beautiful space with a lovely round stage in the middle, and there's four artists, you know, focusing on different color techniques, how to build your Instagram following and get, you know, build your clientele through social media channels. Frida's just going to come back from London and Paris Fashion Weeks and talk about the latest trends that she's seeing internationally and how you can replicate them in the salon. So it's a one-day look and learn that's just got these four incredible artists that's going to give you a wealth of knowledge.
Okay. So you mentioned your Instagram before. So where can people connect with you on or any of your social channels? How can they reach out to find out more about this event or anything just to share, like, you know, to contact you and connect with you? Where would you send them?
Yeah, well, definitely come to our AH Instagram page, which is A_H_salon. You'll find us on Instagram. There will be a link there. So if you want to find out more about the event, the link will take you straight to the event. And I manage the Instagram page. So if anyone, you know, if there's anyone listening out there that finds themselves in a similar situation to mine, or, you know, if you ever want to reach out, I'm always up for a chat, you know, and don't feel like there isn't anyone there that's not willing to listen, because I always am. So find the Instagram page. You know, if you're interested in checking out the event, if you're interested in making a donation, you can do that too, no matter where you are in the world. Or if you just want to find out a little bit more about autism, you can do that too. So yeah, that's how they can contact me and how they can find out more about the event.
Got it. Okay. Well, I'll put those links in the show notes for today's podcast. So wherever you listen to this podcast, in the show notes, those links will be there. They'll also be on my website, growmysalonbusiness.com. If you're listening to this podcast with CJ and have enjoyed it, then do me a favor, take a screenshot on your phone and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating and review on the Apple Podcast app. So before we wrap up, CJ, is there anything else that you'd like to finish up with?
Well, look, obviously, firstly, thank you for having me on the show. I've been a huge fan for a long time, so it's an honour, Anthony, to be sharing some time with you. And I don't say that flippantly. I mean that, you know, very sincerely.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Yeah, but anything else, the only other thing I'd say that if, you know, a lot of people out there around the globe have probably find themselves in some difficult financial times. I know, obviously, in the UK, that's particularly difficult, and I think here in Australia we're heading down that same path. Find your why. Find your why, you know, because it'll get you through anything, man. It will get you through anything, and it'll be the thing that helps you succeed when everybody else is giving up. So that's the only message I want to leave your viewers with.
I think that's a really good place to finish up with. So, CJ Morello, thank you for being on this episode of the Grow My Salon Business Podcast.
Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us, you'll find us at growmysalonbusiness.com or on Facebook and Instagram at growmysalonbusiness. And if you enjoyed tuning into our podcast, make sure that you subscribe, like, and share it with your friends. Until next time, this is Anthony Whittaker wishing you continued success.